like to thank the organizing committee for inviting me here. I'm about to share with you what I do in practice. We're going to talk a little bit about artificial insemination, embryo transfer, ultrasonography, ovum pickup, and in vitro fertilization, and stem cell oocyte production. I'm just going to mention that kind of being a human spoon here. Before I get started with what I do, what I try to do and what is necessary before I start any of these programs with the producer is to sit down and get a basis for their herd health program, understand their vaccinations, their worming, how many calves are weaning, is the reproduction good, so if they have records, we want to look at that. It's really hard to go into one of these endeavors, and it takes a lot of work from both of us to do this and not get the outcome that we expected because we forgot to check something. So, and then the other thing that I feel is really important is that the producer should know what to expect. If I'm doing artificial insemination and whatever protocol that we're using, then we should have an idea in our mind what the expectations are and talk about them. There's no surprises. In the case of embryo transfer, which I do a lot of, I tell a producer expect to collect 10 per flush, 5 to 7 of those that are viable, and a third of the time we're going to end up with nothing. And they need to know that, because they've heard from their neighbor that doc got that for them, but in reality, I take this every day of the week. This is an outlier. That was DAR Elba 55. She did that every 30 days. Talk about artificial insemination. If we're going to start a program, it takes added labor, some kind of facility to restrain the cattle. I look far and wide for that picture. And then an individual that has the knowledge and the expertise to get the job done correctly. Talk about animal selection. So who are we going to do these technologies on? In my case, most of the time, the client's telling me. They're bringing me a cow to our facility in Turlock and saying, Doc, here's a cow I want you to flush, and this is the semen I want you to use, good or bad. That's what the typical scenario is. So the seed stock producer that's producing bulls and show heifers, he already has that figured out. The club calf producer, he wants steers, show steers. I have a lot of those. I do a lot of club calf work. Commercial producer, I don't work a lot with commercial producers yet. It's been a recent change. I'm going to start with my first herd this fall, and we've already sat down and had the herd health talk and expectation talk, and we decided that we were going to start AIing just a group of heifers, their replacement heifers. That's where we're going to start. That's where we're going to work all the kinks out, get all the facilities in line, and get everything started, a starting point. The end result of all these programs, however, is more marketable progeny for less money. It's more marketable progeny for less money. We talk about estrus detection. In the donors and the recipients, it's important, because I need to be able to, for the donor to be able to coordinate that ovulation and the presence of that semen to ensure that I have embryos, viable embryos, in the dish when we're done. With the recipients, I'm trying to synchronize the day since estrus of that recipient to the age of the embryo. In other words, if I have a 6.5-day embryo, I would like to put that embryo in a recipient that was in heat 6.5 days ago to maximize my opportunity for pregnancy. These are the little things that if you go to a timed ET program or a timed AI program, you'll succeed. But I think this is the extra step that gets some of my clients really what they want with a little extra. We have plenty of methods and aids for heat detection, and we use them all. Cowboy on a horse is money well spent as long as he knows what a cow in heat is. Getting air tag numbers for you and times. That helps you in both your AI and your ET. Paint stick, heat patches has all been mentioned earlier. There are some automatic computerized systems that are available. They cut down on your labor costs quite a bit. They cover large areas of ground, can cover a lot of cattle, but they're expensive. I've been fortunate enough to have AffiMilk installed at our facility in Turlock, and it has done wonders for me. I know exactly what time that animal did her first stand. And it is true. Most of the time, it's while I'm sleeping. So when I get to the office in the morning, I go to the computer, I punch a button. These cows, these donors were in heat at midnight. I know right when to breed them. So it's a tool. In embryo transfer, we're trying to synchronize the estrus or the follicular wave of the donor with the estrus and the follicular waves of our recipients. We want them to coordinate. We've talked plenty about today about artificial insemination protocols and synchronization. And in that case, you're taking a whole group of cattle and synchronizing them so you can focus all your labor and energy and work in a very narrow period of time and get some reasonable results. And the tools have all been talked about today, GnRH, prostaglandin. In terms of insemination, the key individual is the one that knows how to handle the semen correctly. He's doing things with clean. Oops. He's using clean equipment. Water temperature, that's correct. He knows how to work below the frost line with his embryos or his semen. That right there I see a lot of. And that semen has undergone an over 200 degree temperature change 15 times if we're breeding 15 heifers. So those last straws are really bad. The real bad part of it, about it is if we're only breeding 12 and they give me the last three to use on a donor, it's a disaster. It's a disaster. That little piece of cardboard, really, you can adjust those so that you work below the frost line, get a little headlamp, and handle your semen quite well. Timing of insemination has been mentioned in the handling as well. So it's all very important and all adds up to good success. Animal handling. If we have good facilities, the cattle will flow through them very well. If we have poor facilities, it'll entice us to use methods that are counterproductive, like hot shots, dogs, yelling and screaming to get the cattle through. Dr. Carroll has shown that those kind of activities and disposition scores do affect our outcome of pregnancy and production. These animals with a disposition score of 5 don't get pregnant very easy, and they don't do well in this feed yard. Ultrasonography, I do this on a daily basis. We use it to examine donors before we do anything with them. Keep hitting the wrong button. Examine their ovaries, do a complete exam, their uterus. You'd be surprised how many animals show up at our facility pregnant. It's really hard to flush a cow if she's pregnant. We can do IVF on her, though. IVF and OPU. I will evaluate donors at breeding if I have a choice of semen. Sometimes I'll get a client that will say, well, doc, if she comes into a real good heat and has a good response, then use this $1,500 semen. If she doesn't, then use $100 semen. So the ultrasonography gives me a choice or a method to make that decision. I also look at them. This is an ovary with a bunch of corpus lutei on it. Prior to flushing, so we know what to expect after we flush that cow, what should be in that dish. I also use the ultrasound to do a complete exam, and a complete exam means everything. It's very embarrassing to miss a twin. So I'll examine the uterus, and we're looking for pregnancy. There's a set of twins here. We're determining fetal sex. We can determine whether a cow is close or in estrus, and then any abnormalities like lymphosarcoma, pyometra, mucometra, and then carry on to the ovaries and the cervix, looking at normal and abnormal structures, or identifying the abnormal adhesions, abscesses. You can also use the ultrasound to do a complete bull exam. We can start at the spermatic cord all the way through to the testis, and you can visualize all this, and I use this quite frequently. Internally, you can examine the prostate, ampulla, and seminal vesicles. Embryo transfer has many applications. The most popular is to use the best cows with the best bulls. When I first started out, I got old Bessie that had been through three seasons with a bull, and a fellow wanted to get a couple more calves out of her, and I tried to explain to him that this wasn't going to work. And he insisted, and we didn't get anything. And then he brought me one of Bessie's heifers, and we did well with it, so it worked out. But that's typical application. When you start using these technologies, your herd dynamics will change. The superior genetics that you're producing by doing this increase in proportion within your herd. If you happen to use your lower producing cattle as your recipients, then you've decreased their influence on your herd. So it works two ways. It's very powerful. We also use embryo transfer for repopulation. Some of my clients will use it as a genetic reservoir. If they take a bloodline down a certain path, they don't like the outcome. If they save some embryos back, then they can start over again. Obviously, use a lot in research, and we can move genetics and without the risk of introducing disease by importing and exporting embryos all over the world. It's relatively easy to do. There's quite a bit of paperwork, but it's easy to do. The process itself has a lot of steps of embryo transfer. Start with a selection criteria. Again, the donor's already been selected, but these are criteria that I've worked out with the clients. On the donor side, a cow with a high level of fertility, cycling, good body condition score, no periparturient disease, a calf that's at least 50 days old. And if she's related to a cow that we've flushed before and that cow produced a whole lot of embryos, those are my favorite cows. So it's heritable. They'll do it right down the line. And she doesn't have to be lactating. I have a lot of dry cows in the facility right now. On the recipient side, typically we're looking at proven genetics, calves without a problem, milks well, it's a good mother, brings a good weaned calf in the fall. Typically a younger cow, and with this drought, people have had to depopulate their herds, so we don't have as many females to work with. So I've been doing a couple of different things. Once we put the embryos in the recipients, we can pull a blood on them at 28 days, and I can know within 24 hours if that animal's pregnant, so we can recycle her with the next group of recips. We're also doing virgin heifers. We're using those, not typical in the beef, very popular in the dairy. But times are tough right now, so we're using some of those, and they're out of proven cow families. The calf should be a little bit older, give the cow a little time to build her body condition score up, and again, no periparturient disease, good body condition score, and cycling. Superovulation process is pretty cookbook. You can start from a reference heat, or we have products that'll stimulate a follicular wave. If we start from a reference heat, we'll start our injections anywhere from 8 to 13 days, trying to catch the second or third follicular wave. And in a pinch, I've actually used the first follicular wave, and it works very well. It starts right after heat. If I have a bunch of cows, and this fellow calls and he wants to get a cow done pretty quick, and she was just in heat, doc, we can do that. The injection timing is important, 10 to 12 hours apart, consistent time. So if you start at 8 and 8, with your injections. You're married to 8 and 8 through 3 to 4 days of injections. There's a push right now. There's some work being done by Milo Wiltbank and Ruben Mapletoff. They're thinking that we can recruit more of this follicular wave, the smaller follicles, if we lengthen and increase the exposure to the FSH. So there's a group of us, I just switched over my protocols and we've extended it, and we have our first batch in heat actually today, and everyone was in heat and hot, so that's a good sign. At the end of the FSH injections, we'll give 2 injections of prostaglandin and pull the cedar if that's the method that we use. It's pretty straightforward. Factors that can affect our outcome: age, old Bessie. There's certainly some breed predilections. Brahmin, Jerseys, and Herefords tend to be very easy to stimulate and tend to be prolific if you get a good line. Your Holstein and Angus kind of in the middle of the pack. The Waigu's up towards the top as well. And then your Maine Anjou and Shorthorn are tough, really tough to stimulate. I don't know if it's because they all have small ovaries or what, but body condition score, season can affect us in 2 places. One is during the summer heat. We've had a hot summer this year, and so the fertilization process when we're breeding these donors is interfered with. The second place where we see the effects of this heat is in the fall, between probably about the middle of September through the middle of November. The oocytes that we're working with at that time have been compromised by that heat. So our recoveries are poor, our IVF is poor, and thank goodness most of the producers are having their sales at that time and they're thinking about something else. And that's a good time for me to take a vacation. I actually dissuade people from working during this time period. Follicular wave size will affect our outcome as well. It's been mentioned today a couple of times about the size of follicular wave and the size of the ovary. Large ovary cows typically give you bigger follicular waves and give you bigger responses. The recovery process is basically a process of rinsing out the uterus. We can do that with syringes or gravity flow. We take that fluid and run it through a filter, rinse the filter, put it in a petri dish, and look under a scope and recover the oocytes. The processing, we're either processing embryos for transfer in the recips, and we'll have producers bring truckloads of recips in, we'll transfer the embryos and they'll take them home, or we can freeze the embryos for later. Embryology and grading is very important. In terms of transferring the embryos, typically if we're doing fresh transfers, we'll examine the cow, find the corpus luteum on her ovary, block her with an epidural, and then load the embryo that's already in the straw into an ET gun and transfer it into the horn of the ovary that on the same side as the corpus luteum. If we were using frozen embryos, we do the same process, only we're going to thaw that embryo after we check the recip and then transfer it. And that's for the ethylene glycol cryoprotectant. The glycerol cryoprotectant isn't used very much anymore and requires a microscope, basically a lab setup, to remove the glycerol and rehydrate the embryos. Straw labeling is important. When we're freezing embryos, we need to be able to know what's in the straw. These things are microscopic. I follow the AETA recommendations, American Embryo Transfer Association recommendations for labeling, so that I can send these embryos to another practitioner. He knows what he has in the straw and what stage it is, so he knows what kind of recip or what age of recip to put it in. After we freeze the embryo, we load the embryos into a straw, we put them into our cryo chamber in our freezer. After we put all the embryos in the cryo chamber, we'll go through and see the embryos. And I use a computerized freezer that ramps the temperature down minus 0.5 to minus 0.6 degrees per minute down to minus 32. And we take the embryos from here, plunge them into liquid nitrogen, put them in the canes and into a semen tank where they're stored. Other technologies that I've been involved with, about 3 years ago I started doing OPU and IVF. It's been fun. I enjoy it. It's out there. Donor selection, in my case, were valuable donors that I couldn't get embryos out of, so I started with them first. So these were small ovary cows with small follicular responses. I tried them stimulated with FSH and non-stimulated, and we were getting some results. Finding quite a bit of response variability, just like we would with embryo transfer. In other words, some donors respond better to this process, and I actually had some of these cows that I couldn't get an embryo out of them to save my life that I'm getting very large number out, and I haven't been able to explain it. I've asked people about it, but I don't know why. The process, once we take the oocytes out, now we're taking eggs off this ovary. Once we take them off the ovary, it's really critical that we get them into the maturation media quickly. And once we get them there, they go to the lab where they're fertilized and then matured, and then they're brought back to me as embryos and we transfer them. But time and temperature are very critical, both on the embryo side, the length of time those embryos are out of the media that they arrive to me in, to when they get in that recip. So usually the recips are trucked to me and I'm putting them right in. And the same with the oocyte side. So the time that that oocyte leaves the ovary, gets into the maturation media, and the temperature at which it's maintained is very, very critical. I've learned most of this by trying. Now, these are our results. Within the industry, that this isn't done. People don't show their results. These are consistent with the laboratory that I'm using. And based on my clients, I must be doing all right because they keep bringing me more cows to do. And they're satisfied with what we're getting. On the dairy side, we're getting, transferring these embryos, we're at 61% pregnancy rate. The beef guys, I have a hard time getting information out of. We actually started this last year, and our technician got into a pretty severe automobile accident, so it shut us down last year. And we just started up, so this is only about 4.5 months worth of data. So I don't have last fall's transfers or frozen thawed transfers in this spring's collected yet, but once I do, I'll be able to report on those. This I throw up to be a human spoon. I'm wondering if this technology might be our next art, and I think I mentioned this to you, Allison, some time ago. There's Jonathan Tilley is a researcher in Boston, and he's purified oocyte germ cells capable of proliferating in vitro and then transplanted those in the ovaries of recipient mice that generate fully functional oocytes that fertilize and produce offspring, normal offspring. It's less invasive technique, certainly will be kudos in the animal welfare side of our industry. And we're improving our genetics and reproduction all at the same time. I think it's really important when we start out that everyone understands their responsibilities. The accomplishments that I've made with my clients is a lot of work for my clients, and I appreciate that. We work well together, and it's a give and take thing. This isn't just me, it's us, it's we. And we do well and we work well together. A complete exam is important for you young veterinarians out there. Design programs that meet your client's goals, not your client's neighbor's goals. And then embrace the technologies as tools to improve production and reproduction in our cattle. And I thank you.